Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to the newest episode of the award-winning Conversations podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we are so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. Today, I am so excited to welcome Roger Smith, president of the Northwest Ohio Innovation Consortium. Roger has been a key figure in the glass industry here in Northwest Ohio for more than 20 years. His educational background began with him earning his associate's degree right here at Owens Community College. He went on to obtain a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering at the University of Toledo and later earning his MBA at Bowling Green State University. Prior to being with the consortium, Roger had been in various roles with OI Glass and has a wealth of knowledge and experience in the advanced manufacturing industry. Hi, Roger, and thank you for being our guest today. Roger, welcome to the Conversations podcast. It's a pleasure having you with us today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
We're thrilled that you're here with us. And one of the things we ask all of our guests in the beginning is, how did you know that you needed education post-high school? We know you had a fantastic experience because you're an Owens grad. And so can you talk to us a little bit about what that journey was like for you and what made you decide you were coming to college?
That's a very interesting question. I'm from Northwest Ohio, and I grew up in a small rural community. I grew up on the outskirts of Napoleon, Ohio. And I didn't really have a defined path for where I was going. I knew I was interested in technology. I knew I probably wasn't ready for a straight into four-year school, as much from a social aspect as academically, because I think my high school did a really good job of preparing us for that. So this was the obvious choice for me to get started and essentially learn how to study at the collegiate level and learn about the amount of energy it takes to be successful and really got my feet under me here at Owens, which allowed me to go on further. And those 2 years here helped prepare me skills-wise, but it also helped really clarify what I wanted to do for a living. Because I didn't really know when I got out of high school.
So you knew it was technology, but you didn't know exactly what aspect of.
Yeah, and I actually came here and changed my major at one point. I was in, at the time they called it electromechanical, and I really learned that I loved the electrical side, and that makes sense because my dad was a kind of a serial entrepreneur. He had an electrical contracting business, and so I was a working electrical contractor all the way through high school, and so I knew I loved electricity, and here at Owens, I got a chance to upgrade those skills to, you know, things like design and programming and analog circuits and digital circuits and all those things. And I found that far more interesting than the mechanical side. So that's what essentially made me into the electrical engineer I am today, because I knew I was more interested there.
And so from here, you went to the University of Toledo.
Yeah, I did.
And so talk about that transition and what was that like? Because, I mean, Toledo is responsible for a lot of the innovation in the glass industry that we'll talk about later. But yeah, what was that environment like for you?
You know, since I had my feet under me here and I really knew how to be successful academically, I was able to translate that at the University of Toledo. But back then, funding a college career was completely different animal mm-hmm. than it is today. And I don't know if it's better or if it's worse, but I had to earn money to go to school. It's not my parents could necessarily, they provided everything I needed, but there wasn't enough extra money to send me to school. And so the skills that I learned here at Owens allowed me to get a fairly high-end job at a local small industry. And, you know, back in 1983 and four, I was making $8 an hour, but that was significant money. And so I was able to pay for my University of Toledo education based on the skills I learned here at Owens. Mm-hmm. And that did a couple of things for me. I mean, it mixed up my schedule, made me very, very busy. In my little apartment in North Toledo, I would cook all my meals on Sunday because that's the only time I had to cook because I was busy from dawn till dusk during the week. But the skills I learned here at Owens allowed me to move to the University of Toledo and expand my education. And so skills are super important. But then to really go further in engineering, you have to understand the theory, deep understanding of theory. So Owens taught me the skills. The University of Toledo taught me the theory necessary to really understand the design aspects of all the things that we needed to do as an electrical engineer.
Well, it sounds like not only did you get the skills academically, but you kind of also honed some life management skills as well.
Yeah, and social skills. Obviously, we had joint projects here and things like that. Well, those got much more difficult at the University of Toledo because you were dealing with more people and even a more diverse background. And sometimes schedules didn't match up all that well. So it was learning those social skills as well that allowed success at the next level.
Now, you also went to Bowling Green State University for your MBA.
I did.
When did that happen?
It was actually 12 years into my career at OI Glass that I had been a working engineer at that point. I did 6 years in the controls group. And then by then I had spent a number of years in the what we call the applied development group, which was the research group, but it was a research group that focused on customer-driven projects.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I decided, that it really made sense for me to move into engineering management rather than just being a practicing engineer. At OI, there was an opportunity to move your skills dramatically in different directions, and you didn't need to be a manager, engineering manager, to be successful, but I felt that was where I wanted to go. So with a one-year-old, I rolled at Bowling Green State University in their executive program.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after I did that, we actually got transferred out to the East Coast. Because I was in the executive format, I was able to maintain that education. And that was a tough way to do it, because I didn't have a business degree. And if you didn't have a business degree, you had a bunch of prerequisites to do every semester. So I essentially went to school 52 weeks a year, a fairly young child, a move to the East Coast, and actually, it was a very interesting situation, because I was given a customer challenge in the applied development group, and I developed a product, and the customer really liked the product, and then I developed the process equipment to make the product. Mm-hmm. And then I moved out to the factory and worked as the process engineer for the entire factory while I built the expansion and put all the new equipment in, trained all the folks, eventually became the factory's manager for that product line out on the East Coast, and then eventually the site manager. So there's nothing that will teach you more about innovation than taking your own product and process innovation into the field where you have to deliver for the customer, right? So I learned a lot. And I was, at the same time, getting my master's in business. So I was a pretty busy guy.
There's so much to take away from that experience. You know, a lot of times when people are in any sort of graduate program, there's that whole theory to practice connection, right? And I think this is part of why executive format programs are so different, is that they expect you to have some sort of baseline of experience and life experience, work experience to bring to it. And you can also apply what you're learning while you're working.
Absolutely.
And so were there moments where you said, oh, we talked about this in class, or oh, we just had a reading on this?
There's always that case. I remember even in engineering school, I was working for a local industry, and what I was doing was building a single board microcomputer to control a hydraulic table, and I was programming it in assembler language. All of those skills probably not necessary anymore, but that's what I was doing. And I remember one time we were struggling with a particular waveform, and I was in a class called transform analysis, and I was able to use that class to back into a formula for the waveform that we were trying to replicate and implement it in the assembler code. And I remember my boss looking at me going, how did you do that? And I was like, well, we just had it in class this week. And so I just used those skills. But the same thing occurred in the business world as well, because even as a factory manager, I was P&L responsible. And I didn't necessarily know what that meant before I got into the business school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, really valuable. The other thing that was really valuable is my class was top-notch. I had a medical professor in class with me, a couple of other engineers, the director of compensation for a bank, budgeting director for Cooper Tire. My class was top-notch. It was always energizing to get back to see those folks. And in fact, I just had a conversation with the doctor last week that was in my class. And he's running a fairly large medical program right now. But it's fun to see those people succeed.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you learn a lot through the people who you interact with. I believe that there are different ways of thinking and different things that are required of you depending on what the situation calls for.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more experience you can get, the better off you are.
And so when you talk about wanting to go back to school because you saw opportunities down the road for you in future, you were really looking at it as okay, if I'm going to continue to progress, this is something that eliminates barriers for me so that I can continue to grow and have flexibility in my career.
That's a good way to put it, because I had that mentality, and I don't think I was sophisticated enough to call it elimination of barriers, but I didn't want any excuses. If I was interviewing for a job, I wanted to be the most qualified person doing so. And one of the great things about OI, it's a great company, and I had a long career there, but they insisted that you continue your education, and you could either use their training programs, or they supported me with the master's business, but they absolutely insisted that you continue your education and be the best you could possibly be. And the other great thing about it is so many opportunities, and you could take your career where you wanted it just by taking advantage of those opportunities. So typically I would significantly change my path in the company every 3 to 5 years just to stay, you know, relevant and interested and have a new challenge.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things you hit on is that, you know, a lot of companies provide training in-house. And so you can experience training and education and not have to leave the facility for a lot of companies.
Right. And also, I remember MIT had a really good series of seminars. And companies supported me in going to an MIT seminar at least every other year. And it felt like I was going to the Mecca of engineers, right? It's the only place I've ever seen a sign that says no parking, plasma laser only. And I'm like, what the heck is a plasma laser?
Well, I was about to ask you.
I don't know. Don't know. To this day, I don't know.
So what brought you from the East Coast back to Ohio?
So I haven't been in glass with OI my whole career. I actually started in the plastics group and then spent a lot of time in their healthcare packaging group before I ended up in the glass division. So at the time, I was in the plastics group, and there was an unwritten requirement, but everybody was aware of it, is you had to get manufacturing experience before they would let you manage people. And so this was kind of a no-brainer, is the package and the process had to go into the field. And based on the area of need, so we needed to supply the lower East Coast, like New Jersey, Long Island, there's a ton of filling lines down there, and Connecticut. And so that was kind of our closest plant to that area. And I needed manufacturing experience to grow, and they needed somebody who knew the process and the product without having to relearn it. And so it worked really, really well for me to take that process out to the area it was needed and also get my manufacturing stripe. That took about, I don't know, 2.5, 3 years. And I remember some random Tuesday afternoon getting a call. And that's, by the way, how I ended up in Noack. It's some random Thursday afternoon I got a call. I got a random Tuesday afternoon at like 2:30. I got a call and it was, hey, we have a position for you. It's time to move back. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not, you know, I'm finally integrated into New England, which is a tough place to integrate
into.
It is,
it really is.
And I'm integrated here, really like it here, and I got so much more to accomplish here. And like, you know, we need you here, come on back. So it was just a couple of weeks later, we were on the way home.
The Mayflower truck comes, and here you are.
Luckily, our relocation department did such a good job. You literally just had to, like, have them show up. And it was really funny. Not funny, but there was a storm came through after we had turned our house over, and a tree fell down on the roof and destroyed they had to rebuild part of the roof. And I'm like, man, I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky.
But New England's a fascinating place. I love the history. Walking around North Boston is just absolute joy.
One of the things you had mentioned was, you know, you had finally gotten acclimated and it was so different. What's the difference in working in advanced manufacturing out on the East Coast versus here? Because in Northwest Ohio, we talk a lot about our industrial roots and advanced manufacturing and the I-75 corridor, and mm-hmm. we have a great workforce. I mean, we say that.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming they say something similar.
Well, you know, it was interesting for me, and I have always worked in at the Perrysburg Levis Commons when I worked here in the area. And OI Glass was such a big gorilla on the corner, and everybody was trying to get in to supply you or sell you stuff mm-hmm. or stuff. Well, I can tell you, out in New England, OI doesn't mean anything at all. And so you were just another little tiny manufacturing facility, and they were, you know, they had a lot of other interests. They had a lot of financial interests, and they mm-hmm. had, at the time, it was the dot-com era, so there was everybody was being a freelance programmer. Mm-hmm. And this little manufacturing site in northern Massachusetts, we didn't get much respect from anybody, including the town council. So that was a big difference.
It's always humbling when you go from being the big fish in a little pond to, you know, yep. something different, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So we know that glass has a rich history here in Northwest Ohio,
yeah.
And we're the glass capital of the world. And one of the things that, you know, is just so neat, and I don't know that I had an appreciation for it before being here at Owens Community College, is, you know, our namesake, you know, Michael J. Owens, a Toledo inventor who changed the glass industry forever by changing how bottle blowing is conducted. Back in 1903, he founded OI Glass in 1903. There's a lot of companies that have come out of Michael J. Owens and, you know, what he did for the factories.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about that history and why it's so important to the economy here?
Yeah, sure. You know, he started out as a child laborer. And this is, glass has been around for a long time, right? People have used glass for over 3,000 years. But Michael Owens got his start as what they call a mold boy. So the glass blower stood up on wood benches, and the 10-year-old boys, 8-year-old boys would sit underneath the benches because they fit. And they would open and close the molds, you know, in a hot, dirty, dangerous environment. And so Libby, Drummond Libby, had a glass plant in New Jersey. And there was talk of this area having lots of natural gas. And Libby was not happy with his workforce in New Jersey. So he moved out here and built the factory that's still on the site that still runs today.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Owens was by then an adult working for Libby and got Libby's attention and became the superintendent of the Libby plant. And really from there, got funding from Libby to start the work on the automatic blowing machine,
mm-hmm.
which very interesting. The Michael Owens glass machine was in use in our company till like the late 70s.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was that good. I mean, it had some deficiencies, but it was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But also Michael Owens is the Owens in a lot of other companies as mm-hmm. well. So he had his hand in Libby, and OI eventually owned Libby and then spun it back out. But there's been a close relationship between those two companies for a lot of years. But he was the Owens in the Libby Owens Ford. He happened to hang out with Henry Ford and I believe it was Harvey Goodrich. So it was Michael and Henry and Harvey would go off camping in Michigan. They hung out. That's how he got involved in windshields. He got involved in building materials. So he was quite the inventor. But he rolled this essentially the Owens bottle machine company mm-hmm. out of the Libby Group and sold machines all over the world. And that's kind of the beginning of what made OI global, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he had patents on his machines. He realized that his patents were going to run out eventually. He started a bottle making business as well called the Owens Bottle Company. We still have in a center at Levis, we still have a catalog from 1903 and 1906. for the Owens Bottle Company. And then later merged with the Illinois Bottle Company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Levis family. So that's the Levis influence that you see with Levis Commons. And
mm-hmm.
And Michael essentially moved himself out of that the business operating equation at that point. He let the Levis family take over. They bought a large tract of farmland over by Castalia, which became Castalia Farms, and they really integrated themselves in the area, moving here from Alton, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And Alton was one of the biggest glass plants we had for years and years and years. But interestingly enough, you know, to show the efficiency, there's a particular plant in Illinois that in 76-ish had about 4,000 people that mm-hmm. went to work there every single day.
Wow.
And they walked out of the neighborhood that surrounded the factory and it went to work. And today, that factory has under 400 people, and it makes twice the amount of glass that it made mm-hmm. in 1976. That's the efficiency and the automation that's entered that business to make it successful today.
How much of it is process improvement? How much is it efficiency? How much is it advanced manufacturing? How much is it is machine learning? What's responsible for a lot of that?
That's an interesting question, but all those things are about efficiency, right? And there's not nearly, as we can tell from the past couple of years, even in Northwest Ohio, across the board, there's not nearly as much available manual labor anymore. People have essentially moved their skill set beyond that. So it's really important to operate your business that you don't do it with a lot of manual labor. But all of that stuff, advanced manufacturing, machine learning, is all about efficiency, mm-hmm. right? How do you get the machines to do it in conjunction with the humans, but do it better than a human could do it alone? Much of the technology that you just talked about isn't about necessarily replacing humans. It's about making them more efficient. Given that there are fewer people available to work today, you have to do more with less folks, and that's what that's about.
That's very interesting perspective. I think that when you understand, or when you kind of think back about the history, and, you know, even, you know, I grew up in Detroit, and so, you know, we used to drive by the plant where the Model T was made, and understanding that what made Ford famous and his contributions were about the assembly line.
Yes.
It wasn't necessarily the automobile. He did not invent the automobile. He found a way to mass produce them.
And make it inexpensive enough that a household could afford one. Yeah, that was the key to the expansion, right? Before his assembly line, cars were hand-built, and they were too expensive for the average family. Mm-hmm. And when he was done, they weren't. Mm-hmm. He also paid pretty well for his assembly line workers. And so now they were able to afford one. And, you know, the 4,000 folks I talked about that walked out of the neighborhood around the factory, they don't do that anymore because mm-hmm. they earned enough money for their family to essentially move away from the factory and buy a car and be able to drive to work from a bit of a nicer neighborhood. So it's kind of been a progression of elevating everybody's life standards.
One of the parallels is the Northwest Ohio Innovation Consortium. And so you head up that group. The actual aims of the innovation hub really are parallel to kind of what we're talking about with the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about NOIC and the Glass Center of Excellence, and how will it impact just people in general?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We put the Northwest Ohio Innovation Consortium together really as a means of collaboratively doing innovation, mm-hmm. right? So we have four glass companies that are headquartered in Toledo, so it's still the glass capital. And we substantially use the same furnace technology and roughly the same raw materials. And glass scientists would argue with me about that, but it's roughly the same.
And, roughly is an important qualifier.
Yeah, it's roughly the same. And we all produce products for different markets, right? So the four glass companies in town, Libby makes stemware and tableware. OI makes containers, right? If you're having a beer or a bourbon, it's probably out of one of our containers. Owens Corning makes building material, insulation. They still make fiberglass composites. And Pilkington North America, which is a division of NSG, makes float glass, flat glass for architectural, automotive, and most importantly, solar. And so we all make different things. We all use substantially the same technology. We all have substantially the same problems. And our customers are all asking for roughly the same things. So it makes sense to do that together rather than separately. And that's really what the consortium is about, is improving the efficiency and the characteristics of glass so it moves into the next century like it's moved through the last three or four. Our goal is to make collaboratively make glass stronger and lighter and make it more effective. And that helps everybody. It decarbonizes the supply chain, which our customers are demanding. Mm-hmm. And it makes glass stronger, which can make products lighter, which also, I mean, helps economically, but it also helps with decarbonization. And that should make this area a better place.
It sounds incredibly fascinating. I mean, there's been this long 18 months long process to get us to where we are now. And so can you talk about what that process has been like? You had mentioned earlier that one point early in your career, there was a Tuesday afternoon call. And then recently there was a Thursday afternoon call. Can you talk a little bit about that Thursday afternoon call?
Sure. I was drawing my career to a close. I had actually intended to retire earlier than I did. And I had agreed to stay on till the end of the year. I got a call from the chief technology officer, and I didn't normally get calls from him. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, I wonder what I'm getting fired for. And so I called my people and culture person, and I said, do you know why I'm getting fired today? She goes, I haven't heard anything. You're not getting fired. I said, well, the CTO wants to talk to me. She's like, they didn't ask me anything. I don't know. And so I got on the call. And I wasn't fired. They asked me to take a look at putting this consortium together to go after the federal EDA Federal Innovation Hub designation. And I quite frankly didn't even know what that meant. But I'm not afraid of taking on a challenge. So I was like, sure, I'll be happy to do that. And I started making calls. You were very high on the list of the calls, but I started getting out and meeting people and inviting people to listening sessions and design sessions and trying to ferret out our regional strategy, because Northwest Ohio is full of manufacturing, right? We make virtually everything, but we don't make the same thing. And so everybody was kind of focused in a different direction. And what we wanted to do would be to put a strategy together for Northwest Ohio that we could tell over and over again. So it took about 9 months to hone that strategy. And it was really about glass and solar. And there's a very symbiotic relationship between glass and solar. Glass makes up most of the weight, much of the cost, and about a third of the carbon footprint of solar. So anything we can do to make glass better automatically makes solar better, but it makes a lot of the downstream products better too, right? So if you make insulation better, then that benefits anybody who puts it in their house. If you make glass, architectural glass, better, that impacts everybody who's going to put windows, you know, in their house. So there's a lot of downstream benefits to the things we're working on. But that's how I got involved in NOAC. That's how we put the strategy together. And the interesting thing is now we've used that strategy a number of times. So I was so happy when people started saying the same thing, you know, when everybody in the region started to say the same thing about how we were going to get economic growth and how we were going to get more grants. And so we did not get the Federal Innovation Hub designation, primarily, I think, because we didn't have a lot of experience handling big grants. In Ohio, the Akron Polymer Cluster got a federal designation, and they recently got $51 million to help their polymer cluster out of that program. But then we pivoted to the State Innovation Hub program, and that was successful. We told the same story that we told the federal folks, it slightly modified because the federal folks had more local economic interest, and the state certainly does and wants good jobs to come from this program, but it was a little bit different. But we could use the same themes. We didn't have to get a lot of buy-in because everybody was already bought in, and so it went pretty quickly. Well, then we were able, a National Science Foundation grant came up. The University of Toledo took the lead on it, and they were able to use the same strategy. And now we're working on an EDA Good Jobs Challenge in conjunction with Owens Community College, University of Toledo, and BGSU, and we're using the same strategy over again. Mm-hmm. So it's getting easier, faster, and more efficient to try to get the plethora of government money to help out this region, which this region's always been a little short of that help.
It almost is like you were able to use the lever of the Glass Center of Excellence and the ideals behind that really to create a cohesive vision for advanced manufacturing for the area.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And so Owens is thrilled to be a part of it. The partnerships that we have with some of the glass makers that you mentioned, particularly, you know, for solar, we have a longstanding relationship with, as well as our relationships with Bowling Green State University and University of Toledo. And it's been a wonderful process to see unfold over the last few years, because you will get a random phone call from someone saying, hey, we're looking at this grant, or we're looking at this initiative, or we're looking at blah, blah, blah. And we thought about your institution or your folks to be involved. And so one of the things I've heard you say before is that you spend a lot of your time being quiet about industry secrets, right? You would work on a product and you would develop it, but you know, it was a secret until it wasn't anymore, and that this has required something very different of you.
Yeah.
And so as you think about how you were able to pull and are still pulling people together, what has that process been like, and what have you found that really is about Northwest Ohio and how people are responding to this challenge and the opportunity?
That's a good question. I really like that question, because I was kind of shocked being an industry guy and spending all my time developing technology and not talking about it, because it was somebody else's job to talk about it. It wasn't mine, right? Whether it was marketing or even the CEO, some of the stuff I worked on was only announced by the CEO. That's his job. He worries about public-facing stuff and investors. Mm-hmm. So it was a very comfortable spot to be an engineer in, right? I didn't have to talk to any people at all. But this has been, when I started out and I was getting all these people together, there are a lot of people in Northwest Ohio throughout that do an excellent job, right? Mm-hmm. The economic development directors in each county, the chamber, RGP, the Connect Toledo folks, you know, the Port Authority, all those folks, Cherry Street and Lisk, and they do an excellent job. Mm-hmm. And so I was expecting to get them in a room and find hostility and don't mess with me kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. And that absolutely did not happen. The people of Northwest Ohio were hungry for a single focus. In the consortium, we're not going to do a lot of the work. Mm-hmm. We're going to facilitate the direction, and we're going to depend on the people who are experts at doing that work and getting that stuff done, which is why we depend so heavily on Owens Community College and also the other universities, because you guys are experts at workforce training and development. So we're not going to redo any of that. We're just going to keep everybody on the same page. And so that's really been the goal. In fact, people actually said, we need somebody, some organization to focus us, because we're all just doing a part and we need to be part of a bigger focus. And that's what we've been able to accomplish, I think. So there wasn't any hostility. People wanted to be collaborative and, you know, in good Northwest Ohio fashion, they wanted to cooperate and win together. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a surprise for me and a welcome one.
That's awesome. Well, we're proud and thrilled to be part of the work of the consortium. And you had mentioned the innovation hubs. You know, that was exciting to get that July 1st announcement from the governor, lieutenant governor, and Director Mihalik to say that Toledo was the first innovation hub funded. And so I can only imagine that it felt almost like a dream come true, almost. And so can you talk about, you know, I mean, you were kind of at the center of all
of
this.
I was.
And so what was that like?
It's a very uncomfortable place for me. I actually was talking to two of the folks from the Department of Development who keep track of what we do, and that's their, you know, their role. And they were like so happy, and I was like, yeah, now the easy part comes. We get to just innovate. And they looked at me funny, and I said, yeah, getting up on stage in a suit and tie is the hard part for me. Innovating new products and making them commercial is what I've done for almost 40 years. That's the easy part for me. So I'm glad we can get on to the work. And I really want to emphasize this. That July 1st day was certainly very exciting in Northwest Ohio. On a July 4th week, right, turned out almost 100, I think over 120 people, standing room only crowd.
Yep.
And I remember the governor's assistant came in and he's like, it's time. It's packed. He was shocked by that. So Northwest Ohio turned out in a big way. And that was a really cool event. But the work's just starting, right? The hard part is yet to go, because we have the Glass Center of Excellence to put together, and we're working on that. The talent development program is, really four programs in one, and we're working on putting that together. And really, we need to do that as quickly as possible, because the academic calendar and the interns availability, we're really pushing the time limit on next fall already.
Absolutely.
And so that we've got to get that moving very rapidly. And then the six technology programs, we've got two of those started, but we've got four more to get started and get moving. The hard work is 4 years long. So I just want to remind everybody that while that July 1st was really cool, we have a lot of work to do.
A lot to do. So for people who may be listening who don't have a background in glass, know nothing about engineering, nothing about advanced manufacturing, what is the takeaway that you want them to have about why the Glass Center of Excellence is important?
Keeping local industry strong is very critical. Every company is subject to the economy and energy costs and all those kind of things, right? First of all, we're very fortunate that these four companies exist here, right? Even though they were all founded here in some way or another, some of them have been purchased by other folks and such. So we have to keep them strong. So we keep them here, and we keep the leadership in this industry in Northwest Ohio. But then beyond that, we're starting with the Glass Innovation Hub, but a lot of this stuff can roll out to other industries, right? The talent development program, we're not just developing people for glass. Those same skills will work virtually anywhere in Northwest Ohio. Advanced manufacturing skills are fairly interchangeable. So we'd really like to get started in the glass industry, but then move beyond that.
You had mentioned that when you began thinking about what was going to happen after high school, you had experience in your father's business, and you knew that you wanted to do something with technology.
Yeah.
So for people, either young people who are in high school or people who are looking at a career change, what advice do you give them if they have that same kind of interest but don't know exactly what their next step is?
Now's an ideal time. Right. And it's been ideal for a number of years because area industries are hungry for people who want to work hard and move up. And that's the key, right? Work hard and take on more responsibility. And that allows you to move up. Many of the jobs that I have gotten over the years, I got because I was already doing the job. And so don't be afraid to go beyond where you want to be, but get a basic level of education. That's all you need to get started. And then most employers will work with you either through an apprenticeship program or support for school or an allowance for time off if you have to go to class or something like that. Many employers will work with you to advance your education. And that's the way I did it. I got a basic level of education. I got a job that took advantage of that education while I was getting additional education. Mm-hmm. And eventually, the company started picking up the tab for my education. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what I would recommend is go get involved and don't be afraid to work hard. Because that will solve most of your problems.
Hey, man.
As an old guy giving advice.
First of all, I don't know about the whole old guy thing piece, but one of the questions that I do have that's related to your experiences, I mean, we've talked about, how things changed, 100 plus years ago. And then we're talking about being on the precipice of change again, which is the whole point of the Glass Center of Excellence. What do you see coming down the road? Like, what do we expect to see in terms of industry innovation?
Well, no, that's a really interesting question, because one of the things I've tried to impress upon the maybe less industrial folks that I deal with, the economic development folks or the banking folks or whatever, is how things have changed in my career. And we were recently fortunate enough to have our NOAC board meeting at the new NSG plant in Lucky, Ohio, right? It's the latest float glass plant in the United States. And I've been telling the folks, it's like manufacturing is different today, right? Typically, you'll run your line from inside an air-conditioned control room, and you better be more in tune to statistical analysis and being able to respond to complex situations with complex procedures than, running around with a shovel or a hammer or whatever in a hot environment. And so we went out to the Lucky plant and we took a tour on a very hot July day. And everybody was sweating profusely, but there was almost nobody on the line. We met one quality person on the line who was out, you know, checking the ware that they were producing. Everybody else was at this very large semicircular desk monitoring 24 screens and six displays and a myriad of instruments. And while they had their work uniforms on, they weren't sweating like we were, because they were running the entire factory from the front to the back automatically inside an air-conditioned control room. The work I did with OI at the very end, you run that facility from inside an air-conditioned control room, and you better know more about statistics than necessarily how to use a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's already changed significantly. Where I see it changing in the future even more is more reliance on, I'll say, machine learning or artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a human will get a feel for a piece of equipment, but may not be able to fully optimize it or have the attention to fully optimize it, where you can get a computer with artificial intelligence to monitor that system 15 times a second and make optimal adjustments all the time. So it'll be a continued drive for efficiency and cost reduction. And I think we already have the humans to the minimum limit, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to take many more people out of a factory and still run it, but we need to run it better.
That makes perfect sense. So speaking of running things better and doing things better, you have more than 40 patents.
I do.
So can you talk a little bit about what the process is like, and do you give advice to folks who are interested in turning their ideas, their innovation, into patentable technologies?
That's a great question. So all of my patents were sponsored by or some division of OI. And generally, I was working on a project that they had assigned me to. Mm-hmm. And our goal was to create defendable technology. So I had a great legal team behind me and a great technical team. If you're an individual entrepreneur and you want to patent something, that's a bit of a risky adventure. Now, I'll tell you a little story. My father-in-law, who was a production line worker on a GM foundry plant in Defiance, great guy, but he was an inventor, you know, and he had a workshop out in a building, and he just invent things that he wanted to use himself. And so he invented this little, because they traveled a lot after he retired, and he invented this little personal wipe system to, like, if you needed to use a restroom, you could go clean it up yourself. And he came to me and he said, I want to patent this. And and I said, because I handled outside submissions for the company for a lot of years, and I would get these crazy ideas across my desk. And I said, you know, his name was Don. And I said, Don, my best advice for you is to burn that, burn any drawing you have of it, and forget you ever invented it.
Were you uninvited from Thanksgiving
no,
at that
no,
point?
No. He took that with he eventually did get a provisional patent and tried to market to a couple of places. But here's my best advice: is if you don't have a portfolio of products that you want to patent, which takes a lot of money and a lot of effort, then you're probably going to waste your money if you get one sole patent, unless you have something very significant.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice is spend your patent money carefully, and mm-hmm. you should probably focus on creating a portfolio of products before you do that.
Because how do you define very significant?
Yeah, that's a tough one too.
I would imagine that if you've invented something, you believe that it's significant.
Yeah.
And that you have a little bit of bias there.
As monitoring the outside submitters, I saw one product. It was just one guy had a product, and then he got some investors. And we did a market study for him, and we ended up putting this product in 200 drugstores while I was working for OI Healthcare Packaging.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in 200 drugstores, not a single one sold.
Hmm.
Not a single one sold. One was stolen.
not
a single one sold. And so we brought the data back to him and said that it's not going to work.
Uh-huh.
It was, I won't use the name of the product, but it was to remind you to take your medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't sell. And so that product was a failure commercially. It was a technical success, but a commercial failure. But he didn't want to listen to that advice. He didn't want to listen to that data. And so we got some other investors. And that one product caused no less than four divorces, ruined a couple of family fortunes. I mean, so it's really, innovation is risky. It's, uh-huh. By its own nature, it's taking on risk because you're doing something that's new to the market. And I'll draw a distinction here between innovation and entrepreneurialism, which entrepreneurialism is taking an idea that already exists and making a business out of it. That's far less risky proposition. But if you're an innovator and you're making something new to the market, automatically you know nothing about how it's going to sell. So tread carefully. And the only thing I would patent if I was an individual innovator would be something that has no other means of being done. So when you think about that little applicator that my father-in-law invented, there were many other ways to do that job with a Clorox wipe or even a rag and spray. So there are many other ways to accomplish that. And mm-hmm. So you weren't going to get the defendable position out of a patent that you really wanted. And in some cases, patents, when you're an individual, patents can hold you back because if you're not big enough to supply the companies you're approaching, then your patent actually holds them back from commercializing it because they can't get the supply they need to do it unless you figure it out yourself. That's a tough one. He didn't like my advice, but he did get a provisional patent, spent a year trying to market it, and then was so disillusioned after that year that he let the provisional patent expire. Never, ever told me I was right, but I was right. Yeah, been a great career for me, and Owens was a great start. And I like to say I'm an average guy with public school education because I got all of my education from the public, right? Mm-hmm. Public school, public community college, public universities. And so, you know, if I can be successful and have a great career, pretty much anybody in Northwest Ohio has the opportunity to do that if they're willing to work hard and make it happen. The resources are here.
I appreciate that. And I think that there are a lot of us at Owens and at other institutions throughout the region who are very grateful for the ecosystem of public higher education that we have in this region, public and private, because they do a lot for our community and they really do provide the foundation of how we're able to help people with their talent development, their education, their training, and economic and workforce development. And we're really proud to be part of that and proud of you as one of our alums. So
thank you so much
for being here.
Roger, thank you so much for being with us. I am so grateful for all that you do for advanced manufacturing and workforce development here in Northwest Ohio. Thank you for your time today. And thank you to all of our listeners. Until next time, take care.